This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. We would like to think that if someone is sexually assaulted, he or she could go to the proper authorities, report it, see the perpetrator tried in a court of law with an appropriate punishment. Isn't that how we're brought up to believe things work? Well, it is not working that way in the military. Accusing someone of sexual assault can hurt you career-wise, socially, administratively. The Department of Defense reports 20,000 service members experienced at least one sexual assault in 2014, and that's virtually unchanged since 2010, despite the DOD's insistence that it is tackle the problem and that most active duty members received effective training on sexual assault. Well, if you're the plaintiff in a sexual assault case in a military court, the cards seem to be stacked against you. And the U.S. Senate just missed another chance to help even the playing field for sexual assault plaintiffs. Colonel Don Christensen is the former chief prosecutor of the U.S. Air Force, where he tried over 150 courts-martial as a trial and defense counsel, and then he presided over 90 trials as a military judge. Today, he's president of the group Protect Our Defenders. Their mission is to end what they call the epidemic of military rape. Colonel Christensen, thank you so much for being with us on Stateside today.
Thank you for having me.
I would like to give our listeners first a sense of your military roots and your military career so they understand how deep they are. Your family military ties, what, go back as far as the Battle of Little Bighorn?
Yes, my great-great-grandfather served as 7th Cavalry and was at the Battle of Bighorn, was wounded. My grandfather was career force, my dad was career force, and I spent 23 years in the Air Force myself.
And your active service began July 1991. When did you leave the military and why?
I officially retired on 1 January of this year, but I went on term leave in October of 2014. And the reason I left was because over the course of my 23-year career, I had seen how military justice was handled, and I knew it needed to be changed.
And you were the guy doing that. So this is someone who had spent his career in these military courtrooms. When and how did the disillusion and the disappointment set in for you, Colonel?
Well, it probably started about 15 years ago when I got an experience level enough that I was looking big picture, not just the court in front of me, and seeing how the system just wasn't fair to the accused or fair to survivors of sexual assault. And then in 2012, I prosecuted a case in Italy, U.S. v. Wilkerson case, which was overturned by a general after we got a conviction. And that kind of was like the last straw for me because I saw that justice wasn't done by the facts. Justice was done by who you knew.
And now you're president of Protect Our Defenders, trying to end military rape. What do you most want the public to realize and to understand about sexual assault in the military?
Sexual assault is pervasive. It is something that impacts the ability of the military to do its mission. It is driving good men and women out of the military and keeping good men and women from coming into the military. And it is something that a survivor of sexual assault is rarely ever going to see justice for what's happened to them.
And it seems as we talk about this, Colonel, that there are some key components that we need to tackle. The actual assaults, and then what happens when a victim reports a crime, if they do, and then what happens in the courtroom when one of these cases actually gets there. So let's start, if we will, with the commission of the crime. And for years, we have heard the military tell us there's zero tolerance for sexual assault. So why is it that the sexual assault rate is basically where it was in 2010? That's more than 4 years ago and no improvement.
I would say it's two things. It's a leadership failure in the DOD because they aren't sending a clear message to the 1.2 million men and women in the military that sexual assault will be handled seriously because they are talking on both sides of their mouth. The second part of it is obstruction. They're obstructing any kind of real fundamental change that will improve our ability to hold people responsible.
So perpetrators probably feel pretty safe. Is it safe to say that?
I'll give you an example. So in 2014, we had about 20,000 sexual assaults. Of those 20,000 sexual assaults, probably about 200 people are convicted, maybe 300. And so the odds are astronomically in your favor. If you commit a sexual assault, you'll never be held responsible.
And I think the public might be surprised to realize that the numbers that we're getting from DOD, that 20,000 some, that doesn't include civilian employees, spouses, kids, or members of the public, both at home and abroad?
that's kind of the untold story, is we have civilians work on base who are sexually assaulted. We have husbands and wives and children that are sexually assaulted that don't count. And then, you know, the people in the local community that are sexually assaulted that aren't counted in those numbers.
And then tell us what you've seen happen when a victim actually steps forward, goes to a commanding officer to report the assault.
When a victim comes forward, she runs a gauntlet, or he runs a gauntlet of oppression from the leadership. They are viewed as the one who has done something wrong. They often face retaliation. About 60% of survivors are retaliated against. And this is severe retaliation, career-ending retaliation, where they're kicked out of the service, they're ostracized within their unit. And they will often see their commander that the DOD keeps saying is supporting them, supporting instead their rapist. They'll see their commander testify for the rapist.
Why is that? The system seems very much, you know, there for the commander, and I got to imagine that looks pretty bad for a commander's record if they have a convicted rapist.
You know, those who oppose fundamental change keep saying we need to hold commanders more responsible. The reality is it's impossible to hold commanders responsible. We have this concept called unlawful command influence, where you cannot in any way discourage somebody from supporting an accused. And so commander is free to do that to a degree he wants to do and will never be held accountable. You know, and then for all the talk about holding commanders more responsible, DOD can't show a single time a commander has been held responsible.
Give us some of what you've seen over your years in the courtroom that kind of illustrates how skewed this is.
Well, I can give you a classic example in the case we did, the Wilkerson case, which really highlighted and brought this issue before Congress. He was supported by over 30 commanders. Many of them showed up in the trial and testified for him and say how great of an airman he was, how great of a pilot he was. These are people from lieutenant colonels to four-star generals. And despite the jury convicting him, another three-star general who had the power to overturn the case, based upon all the support he got from commanders, said, "I think he's innocent, set him free."
I think most people listening to us talk right now, I know my jaw hit the ground when I read that. Something called Article 60 allows that commander to overturn the verdict, basically ignore the jury's decision?
Yes, and that thankfully has been changed, and that just went into effect. And that is something that Protect Our Defenders is very proud of, because we were able to push that reform through. So that has been stripped from commanders.
That at least you've been able to accomplish. I'm speaking with Colonel Don Christensen. He's the former chief prosecutor of the U.S. Air Force and now president of Protect Our Defenders. This group's mission is to end what it calls an epidemic of sexual assault in the military. Colonel, give us a sense. As you say, this Article 60 has just been amended, so now a commander cannot overturn the verdict, although in this big case that you prosecuted, that's what happened. But what are some of the other different ways that procedures in a military courtroom happen than what we are familiar with in a civilian courtroom?
Sure. Well, fundamentally, in the civilian system, the district attorney or the U.S. attorney, they're the ones who are in charge of the prosecution. And so they're making the prosecution decisions. They're determining what witnesses to call, whether or not to use experts, you know, what the charges are going to be, if charges should be amended or charges should be dropped, whether or not to appeal a decision by the trial judge if he suppresses evidence. Under our system, instead of a prosecutor making that decision, that's made by a general officer who could be a pilot, could be an artillery officer. They're not lawyers. They're making all those decisions. They decide what the charges will be. They decide if they'll go to court. They decide if you could use expert witnesses, for example. So instead of having an independent professional trained and experienced lawyer make those decisions, we're having lay people make the decisions.
And the U.S. Senate just failed to pass legislation that you strongly believe would help fix some of this. It's New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand's Military Justice Improvement Act, the MJIA. What would that act do?
What that act would do would shift that decision authority from a few select generals to independent military prosecutors, a senior rank, who have experience in prosecuting serious crimes. And so the decisions being made on whether or not to go forward on a case based on the facts, not based upon the inherent bias of the commander.
and they didn't pass that. And I know there's been a couple of attempts to do so. And the Pentagon claims the MJIA isn't needed and the sexual assault problem in the military is improving and that it would erode a commander's authority. And your response?
Absolutely false. First, what MJIA does, it takes the power away from less than 3% of the commanders. 97% of the commanders will have exactly the same power they have now. It's just what we call a convening authority, the person who sends a case to trial. Second, what it will do is give confidence to survivors that their case will be handled fairly and impartially. And on the flip side, it will give confidence to people who are accused of a crime that their case will be handled fairly and impartially. Because right now we have some commanders sending everything to trial. And that's no better than not sending anything to trial. You know, I no more want guilty people to go free than I want innocent people to be convicted.
Colonel, I take it from looking at looking through the Protect Our Defenders website, you and the group have no doubt that there are post-9/11 veterans right here in Michigan, perhaps listening to us talk right now, who were sexual assault victims, who either did not report the assault or did so in a way that would keep the crime from being investigated and prosecutors because they were afraid of retaliation, or who went to trial with unsatisfactory results. What have you seen that do to the vets?
Oh, it's horrible. I can give you a great statistic on that. Women veterans, homeless women veterans, over 40% of homeless women veterans were victims of sexual assault while they're in the military. You can just logically make the conclusion that that has lifelong severe consequences for so many of our survivors. They have over a million VA visits each year associated with military sexual trauma. So it is something that follows them forever, especially when they have had the very institution that they love turn its back on them.
What would you say to the people who are listening to us talk right now, Michigan men and women who may be considering joining the military, or to those of us who have parents who have kids of age who could be considering joining the military?
I would say to go in with your eyes wide open, to understand this is a serious issue, and that we need to put pressure on Congress to get this changed because, you know, I love the military. I've dedicated so many years of my life to the military, my family has. And I want to see be the best it can possibly be, and it's failing right now.
Would you want your kids or your grandkids to be in a uniform right now the way things are?
You know, that is a very tough question for me. I'd have a long talk with my children if they wanted to go in.
And then, as you say, eyes open, but there are stories that veterans have shared on the Protect Our Defenders website even that even people that did have their eyes open, something happens. There was one father whose daughter, they said, committed suicide, but then her obvious injuries belied that.
Yeah, it's a very sad case. And that's something that the American people need to understand, that military sexual assault is different than other sexual assault for so many reasons. And one of them being is that sexual assault is always bad, but if you're a civilian employee at Walmart and you're sexually assaulted, you probably don't work with that person. And you're free to quit Walmart if you do work for Walmart. You can try to get that person fired if you work there. But in the military, your entire life is going to be with that person who has sexually assaulted you. And you're going to be working with his friends. And it's such a closed community of trust. When that's violated, the impact is lifelong.
Colonel Don Christensen is president of Protect Our Defenders, and he's the former chief prosecutor of the United States Air Force. You can learn more by going to the group's website, which is protectourdefenders.com. Colonel Christensen, thank you so much for talking with us today on Stateside.
And thank you so much.